Follow me down this deep, dark hole.
Welcome to New Horror Express, your weekly podcast chatting to the best indie talent the horror genre has to offer. I'm your host, Scott Murphy, and on today's podcast, I'm chatting to director Jacob Bauer about his latest film, the South African eco-horror Gaia. Over the course of the interview, you will hear me talk to him about the early genesis of the project, the challenges of shooting on isolated locations in the rainforest, and the challenges of having to shut down the production due to COVID. Plus, I talked to him about the film's influences, the film's success at South by Southwest, and just how much attention he pays to reviews. All of which and more you can hear right now in my interview with Jaco. Hi Jaco, welcome to New Horror Express.
Thank you, Scott.
So we've got you on to the show today to talk about your new film, Gaia. I wanted to, how did you first come on board the project as the director? I saw from your credits that this is the third time you've collaborated with the writer, Tertius Kapp.
We know each other for a long time. We actually started working together when I was still doing theater. He was writing for theater as well. And so we've been coming a long way from theater. Then we went into television. We did some work there together as well. And I think it got to a time where a lot of us, the young people, you know, I'm talking from art directors to wardrobe, to writer, director, cinematographer, we do a lot of work and we are never able to, I guess because of the industry, local industry, hold on to kind of the IP of the work. And so we set out, well, maybe we should start producing ourselves. And me and Yori, the DOP, and Tarsis started this initiative to create something that we can hold on to as much of the rights as a work. But we had no idea that we thought we might do a few works, but just Gaia and the success of it really took us by surprise. So in the beginning, we set out, you know, there's a few parameters we set out with for the project. We wanted to explore a horror genre. We thought of nature, to portray nature as one of the main locations, and then it became a character. I wanted to work with a smaller group of actors, like a small group of three, mainly four. And then we started talking about, you know, simple parables of myths, and we got to Abraham and Isaac from the Bible and the binding myth. And then, you know, stuff started developing from there. So it was not necessarily that Tashis wrote the script in isolation. It was something that developed, and the whole thematics of it kind of came by us going on location recce and then being confronted with nature, and nature then becoming a character. And there was quite a few location scouts and stuff. And every time we discover new stuff on location that we want to bring in. So it was kind of a, you know, it started off as one thing and then it took form into something else. So I was very much part of the whole process. And once we kind of had a basic idea or script together, we approached the crew, and it's normally people that I've worked with or we've worked with before in the industry. And we had quite a complex financial structure of financing the film and also crew, also to empower crew, because we don't have any unions or anything like that in local industry to empower. So even the group has shares in the film, or, you know, so it's really great that, you know, not just for us, but also that, you know,
yeah,
crew members can also kind of own part of the film. And So that's kind of a very kind of short summary of the whole project.
Yeah. Okay. I had actually was planning to ask you if it had been difficult getting funding for the project, because the previous two South African directors I've talked to on the podcast, Alistair Orr and Ryan Kruger, mentioned that it was difficult to get funding for a horror project in South Africa.
Yeah, it was quite difficult. I think because we've worked, or the group of us have worked so much in television before, we could keep costs really low to a certain extent. I don't know how much of these things I could say, but maybe I have to see Scott. But anyway, so it was quite tricky. But CakeNet came along, or MNET, which is part of MultiChoice. And because of them, we were able to. And then obviously because of the shares contribution there, you know, there was quite a lot of equity that we also could bring to the table. So just as people with money, you know, equates to what they own in the film, so much so is actually the work that a costume designer or whoever puts in also equated to shares or their money. So yeah, it was not easy, but we got it. And thanks to them, we were able, and obviously with COVID, you know, just really severing it in half. So we shot a week and then we had to break, and not knowing if we would come back, and got back 4 months later to finish the film. So yeah,
so you shot the film during COVID, after the pandemic started.
Yes, so we shot, and that in March last year. Is it last year? Time has got a strange thing at the moment. We started in March, and then we shot 7 days, and then national lockdown in South Africa was called. So we had to break. We have to leave the location, travel 650 kilometers back to Cape Town, where everybody lived. And then not knowing if we can make it, come back, actors availability, blah, blah, blah. And then luckily after 4 months, we were able to come back. But we didn't have a lot of time because of availability. So a lot of things and a lot of our locations fell through because of COVID. So it was quite tricky to finish it. It was not an easy film. Never mind a pandemic, you know, just the nature of the film and being so close to nature. We really fought nature a lot of the time because of the location being so remote.
Yeah, I was wanting to ask about that. It's just in terms of the difficulty of actually just filming in the rainforest. It just brings to mind, you know, the documentaries and the making of like Fitzcarraldo and Apocalypse Now and stuff. You know what I mean?
Yes, exactly. Yes, like exactly. Now you do like a week and then there's a global pandemic. It was so weird in the beginning because this whole subject matter of the film or themes, you know, then that's the reality that's happening in the world, and fiction and reality all started to blur. So it was quite a strange time. But yeah, some of the locations were really, you know, it's like 4-5 kilometer trek down a gully into the forest, no vehicles. I mean, we all carried parts of gear. Then to get, you know, special makeups, makeup and prosthetics and stuff down there. For instance, the Gaia tree, that was one of the main, it doesn't look like it on film, but it's situated like on a 50 degree angle. So it was just crew and myself were just really falling, slipping, eaten by mosquitoes. And that was just some of the day. So yeah, I hope it shows in the film how treacherous experience it was.
And was there any major on-set disasters, other than it just being generally difficult?
No, except for a global pandemic. No, it was okay. I mean, it was like minor injuries, but nothing major. It was just quite a physical shoot. It was, you know, it's like heat, moist, insects, rain, mud. So, but there wasn't any major stuff except for COVID.
I suppose at least the one thing you had in your favor is that you have like a very small cast of like four. So the social distancing would really be okay.
Yes. I think, you know, that was one of the parameters from the beginning to keep it quite contained.
And yes, we were very lucky in that way. And that nobody got sick or in the middle of the shoot. We were very blessed.
And how did the cast come on board? I noticed that you had worked with a couple of them before. Did you reach out to them?
I've worked with Monique before. Alex van Dijk, I haven't worked with him before. I've seen some of his work in other films. Carl, I've also worked before in theater and in television. I think the first one to come on board, you know, especially once the whole world of Gaia with Tarfia started taking place or shape, you know, this father and son survivalist, we both felt it had to be Carl. And I think he's the one we first reached out to. And I can remember he was on his honeymoon, I think. And he said, yes. And then he started growing his beard. And then the shoot kept on being pushed forward. So he had this like long beard hair for, and then there was COVID for 4 months, all the haters in between. So he had this like crazy hair and beard thing going for like probably 8 months. So I feel very sorry for him, but he's a very committed actor. And I'm so glad he was part of it because he was really professional. And he's, you know, sometimes, you know, it's so physical and in nature to keep that focus. I'm very glad that he was on board. He held the three of us, or the three of the cast together. And then Monique, obviously I've worked with her before. So we had a really good experience on The Spruce, which was like a supernatural series we did before this. Alex, I didn't know, but I had a meeting or two with him. And sometimes, a lot of times I do auditions, but sometimes I also feel one gets a sense of someone meeting them or talking to them. So I had some meetings with him, and then we casted him as and then for Anthony, who plays Winston, I had quite a few auditions for that. And Anthony is actually based in Joburg, so he had to come down and shoot with us on location.
How long did the project total take in total then, with the kind of split up of the shoots?
Well, what was supposed to be, like a 3 week with a little bit of post-production, that became like a 6 months actually. But in total shooting days, 16, we shot the film in 16 days. There's two extra days, we made up 18, which me and the DOP did some nature shooting, establishers, and then obviously a lot of the macro shots as well. But in terms of performances and stuff, 16 days. So it was quite full days, averaging like sometimes 7-8 pages a day. So it was not easy.
Yeah, as seems typical on any indie production that I've interviewed.
Yeah, and I guess, you know, we thought it, you know, in terms of production design, you know, it could be cheaper or whatever, if we embrace nature, but you know, by doing that, we made it so difficult for ourselves because of, you know, variables that you cannot control in terms of nature.
Yeah. What was the most challenging variable in terms of that?
Insects. Insects, and it's just physical. It's really, you where you have a 12-day shooting day, gets then, and it's quite heavy, say it's 7-8 pages, it gets chopped off by 2 hours because you need to walk or trek. So it was just really physical. There wasn't really big accidents or anything except falling and people hurting, but not in serious ways, except for the pandemic, of course. But I think it's just like, we were really fighting nature.
Yeah, absolutely. You mentioned that you drew a lot of inspiration from biblical references, Abraham.
Yes.
Did you draw any inspiration from other eco-horror films, or was that didn't really come into your thinking?
I try, you know, when research happens, and then you can try and look and see what's out there, but then there's also a moment where you try not to, because sometimes you see something and then you can't unsee it somehow, and you kind of subliminally kind of influenced by it. So I try not to look at too many films. Obviously, some I've already then seen. So I can't say per se. I mean, I've got some of my references or visual references. I also looked at, old, except from the biblical, like, old painters like Brueghel, a lot of artists, I would say, Goya, just in terms of a visual style. But I try not to, it's tricky these days where everything is so accessible that it becomes, sometimes to try and be original is a bit tricky with all the exposure of everything available always. So one has to try and sometimes not to venture too far into it. So it's kind of a push and a pull, I would say. But I can't now for the moment think of anything specific in terms of the thematics that really I kind of searched for or took from. Do you have any? I mean, do you see any references that I might not or subconsciously?
No, I'm not sure. No. Okay. I've unfortunately not had the pleasure of seeing the film yet.
Okay. Well, I must get one to you immediately from Dika or from XYZ.
So I look forward to it, certainly. I've heard.
Maybe we should do another conversation after you've seen it, and then we can do another 20 minutes.
I'd absolutely, I would absolutely.
I'm totally up for it. If Molly is up for it, we can totally set it up. I would really like to also hear and maybe what you've seen in it. And because sometimes, you also do work and you have imagery and you do stuff, and then it's always a way of where you take your references from. Or but I mean, for me, it was not just the visual, it was also necessary for me to create a very strong atmosphere in the film. And I've worked with Pierre Henry Wickham, composer, for a long time, so I'm glad he was part of that. And then there was also the idea of, because body horror, if I would call it, it's not specific that I wanted to go into it, but by nature you do if you start, combining nature and fungal and human, or mixing those up. But I wanted also the audience to have a sense that it must be visceral, that when they watch it, you can feel it crawling under your skin in some way. I don't know if I always succeeded, but it's kind of, also kind of strong stamps that I wanted to put on the work.
Yeah, it certainly sounds that. I'm doing my research on the film, and it certainly sounds like that, and reading other reviews as well.
Okay,
it seems like from what I've read, it's a very visual film, it's a very atmospheric film. It's the words that are often mentioned are psychedelic, dreamlike, Were you at all worried that would be divisive in terms of audiences, or you would just single-mindedly, this is our film, this is how we want to present it?
Yeah, kind of. So if you know too much, you I think also if I know now after I've shot this movie, then I would maybe not take it on again, if you know what I mean.
Yeah,
taking on nature in such a way. I sometimes feel that one can do a lot of research, but one must to kind of tap into some feeling or personal connection to something. I mean, I did set out for the film to in a way, see it as a love letter to nature, to show the beauty. But then at the same time, the beauty that there is, then also the horror caught up in that. And then, so there was moments of, the idea of the sublime, where extreme beauty and horror and the abject is all kind of in one. So that was one of the ways of trying to portray it. Obviously, VFX was a part of it. I haven't done such extensive VFX before, and I wanted to keep it to a minimal, but, you're also trying to set up a fantastical world and give attributes like intelligence or a certain form of communication to nature or to Gaia. So I had to kind of bring in like a visual effects element. Yeah, I'm proud of it. I mean, I have, obviously in retrospect, one can look back at stuff, but I think I must also learn to let stuff go. And at the time, this is kind of what happened, and this is what decisions we made and I made. But yeah, I'm quite proud of it. Under the circumstances, yes. Sorry, I don't know. I'm talking circles now. It's been a long evening.
I'm sure it has. I know you've had a lot of press, so that is perfectly fine. I wanted to talk a little bit about South by Southwest because yes. You became certainly on horror sites that I saw. This is how I became first aware of you. The kind of breakout horror hit. In South by Southwest. So how was that experience? How did you get into it? And how was that experience for you?
Look, it was such a strange thing. I mean, when we shot and when we had a week of footage, and then, you know, it was last year and we had COVID. And in that time, I started editing down with the editor. We did like a sizzle reel. And then while we're waiting, not being able to know, we kind of reached out to XYZ. And then they thought it was interesting. And then when we got back on track again, then they kind of came on board in terms of our sales agent. But in that, we submitted to a few festivals. And I think South by Southwest is kind of the first major one that kind of picked us up. Obviously, we were very elated and it was amazing. I do, it's always difficult to do it online. I found it very tricky to watch. A lot of the movies we couldn't watch because of it's only access to in America. And obviously, you know, that thing of chance meetings and meeting people or talking about stuff, all that is, you know, obviously didn't happen. So, but anyway, I think it's just amazing with the success, and then Yori also winning a cinematography award. It really helped kind of just give it a push. So yeah, what can I say? It's just, it's really great. And it's playing at some festivals. I think there's one in Germany. There's one in Perth or in Australia. There's one in Barcelona. So there's a few other ones. But I mean, I think in terms of the major ones, South by Southwest, it's really been great for us in terms of creating this momentum.
Did it play anywhere in South Africa as well?
No, not yet. We, because of CakeNet or MNET/MultiChoice's involvement in some of the funding, they own the African rights. So they asked us please to show at their film festival. They call this Silver Screen, Silver Scatum, that was supposed to be in October, but it's been postponed to March next year. So we thought we wanted to use the momentum of the international release and then release it here, but it's kind of their choice because they own most of the African, yeah, right. So it will show or premiere in March next year, and then we will probably do an online, exclusive online box office release. It's so tricky with real theaters. It's a pity, but, you know, it's just not financially viable to, you know, locally to, and I don't think, you know, the genre is also, it's so, there's not a big genre for it locally, so we'll premiere at that festival, and then we'll do it online, video on demand or something locally.
I was also going to ask about kind of jumping on from South by Southwest. Obviously, it came out to quite a lot of positive reviews. Do you read reviews, and how much pay attention do you pay to that?
I am sometimes. It depends on my state of mind. If my state of mind is not good, then I don't read a review, and then I leave it for later to read. So I've read a lot of them when it came out, but not all of them. But, you know, I've been busy with various other projects at the moment. So when I got asked for this press day, I actually went back and read all the reviews, good and bad, to just get a sense of. So I do read reviews. I get affected by them a lot. But I think maybe there's also been enough success, and I can understand the criticism. I don't always agree, but I can maybe see it a bit more objectively, seeing that there's been great success from certain places. And because it's, you know, it's a little bit in the past, although it's only releasing in America now, I could distance myself a little bit from it. But look, I mean, I'm still learning as well, and it's kind of my first feature, and there's, you know, I've learned so much from this project. So I think it's also good to, you know, to get, you know, criticism. I think one must engage with it. If it's not crippling, it could be good to take and confront yourself with it. like I said, it depends if I have a good or bad day, if I'm going to expose myself to that. Yeah.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. So we only have a couple more minutes left. Sure. And so I just wanted to lastly ask you, you mentioned that you're currently working on several projects. Could you tell us about any of those projects, or are they too early in development for that?
I'm a bit too early at the moment. I just found lately how things work as well. It's almost like you have to have like 10, 12, you know, what do you call it? Irons in the fire, smoldering, as would you walk around with one project. So this downtime, especially COVID, I've been having a bit more time to myself. So it's been really great to really just go without thinking, where will I get funding or who will, to just go into projects and ideas that I've been sitting with for a long time. So it's really interesting to look then as a body of work of these kind of, you know, next to each other. I'm busy with a writer, two writers on two different ones. One is a little political horror on the one side. I don't want to say too much about it. The other one is a type of psychological thriller. And then I have some other projects that is closer to me personally, but I don't know who will fund those, which is a bit more of a social realist, hyper-violent coming of age form. So excellent. Although I find the horror genre very exciting, you know, it's like almost you can literalize feelings. You know, you there's almost like a metaphorical way to go about themes or hide screams in things. Or so I really like the genre, but I don't want to just do that. I mean, it will always have some element of, I guess...
Unfortunately, we've run out of time. I'd love to talk to you further, but yes, thank you for coming on the show, and please do come back on again anytime.
Totally. And if you watched it, maybe we can arrange that we talk again.
That was my guest Jaco there, who I'd like to thank once again for coming on the show. And as always, I'd like to thank you, listener, for tuning in to this latest episode of New Horror Express. Also, remember, if you like what you heard, be sure to rate, review, and subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, and Spotify. And if you can make those reviews 5 stars, that would be really helpful, as if you don't, it upsets the almighty algorithm. And we don't want to upset that algorithm there, do we? Unfortunately, that is all for this time, but be sure to tune in next Monday when I will have another great guest from the world of indie horror. Until then, though, see ya!